the Board of Supervisors will convene, and Supervisor Valenzuela leads in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain Bradley, good to have you here today.
Good to be here. Heavenly Father, we're grateful for opportunity to do the business of government locally. We're truly grateful for those who serve. We give you praise for all that you do. And even today, Father, as the sun comes out after some rain, we truly enjoy where we live. Thank you for blessing us in that way. For those who serve in our county, give them strength, give them encouragement, and may we continually lift them up and be supportive of them in all that they do. Thank you for our supervisors and the decisions they need to make. We pray for wisdom and understanding. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Okay, the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and receives no additional compensation. It's okay, we'll go ahead and do a roll call. Supervisor Help.
Present.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
I'm here.
Supervisor Chris.
Present.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
And Supervisor Coxett.
Here.
Thank you.
We're at item four, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend the time to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances. Written comments can be presented, if so desired, by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. And I have a couple of public comments. If you do have a public comment at this time, their blue cards are over there. If you fill them out and hand them to our CAO, we'll be able to acknowledge you. One of the things I do want to announce today, in case you are here for it, is item 6A, the Forest Service. They will not be here today. We're rescheduling that. So if you're here for that, it will not be happening. All right. So public comment, we'll start with Clayton Raposa.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
Good, good. I know we've talked a couple times. I'm here again. Love coming on up. I'm very excited. Next Friday is our first party.
Need your name for the record.
Oh, Clayton Raposa. I'm
Thank
the
you.
Lead negotiator for the IHSS program for SKA 2015. And I'm super excited. Our first negotiations is next Friday where I'm leading. And I believe we are going to have a pretty good session. I have a statement here from one of our members. Wasn't able to be here today, their client was sick, so I'm just going to go ahead and read that. She says, it's nearly impossible to work as an IHSS provider. Minimum wage is ridiculous for the amount of work that needs to be done, the skill that is required, and the rush pace that the work needs to be done in because the recipients are never given the number of hours required to meet their grade needs. Also, recipients are very low income and often cannot afford to purchase adequate cleaning tools, do not pay for mileage on the provider's car, the paperwork is a nightmare, labor laws regarding timing of pay do not apply, the resources, such as the state 800 number, are admittedly limited, and what they can do and the county resources are even less. So we all know that fast food went up to 20, and I've been working in nursing homes and IHSS for a long time. In 22, we were looking at like $18 an hour, which was a really good wage for a CNA. Now you can't get them to go into the door for less than $22 an hour. And I know you guys can't get anywhere near matching that, but it's insane how quickly the labor costs have gone up all over the state. Unfortunately, the people who get left behind and who are the worst off for IHSS are the clients. And those are the most vulnerable folks in your county. Their only other option is to go to a nursing home. We know there aren't a lot here. I represent, I think the only one in Weed, which might be the only one in the whole county, might be another one, but those beds are not gonna be adequate to keep people in the county if they can't stay in their own homes. And so I get that $20 is gonna be way too big of a jump, but we got to be able to do something to help keep IHSS workers working in this county, and most importantly, those clients in their homes. I mean, all of us want to be in that place when we get old, that we can stay at home and pass away there. Unfortunately, if the program doesn't see a little bit of improvement, we're going to see a lot of workers leave, and folks who could stay in their home won't have someone to take care of them. They're going to have to go to a nursing home, more than likely out of the county, far away from their friends and family. And that's just, you know, I work in nursing homes. It's not something I want to see for anybody. Even if they're a good nursing home, they're not great. So that's just what I want to leave you guys with. And I really appreciate you guys being very responsive to us and listening. You know, it seemed like you were always really listening. So I appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Did you want to give the name of the worker?
She preferred to stay anonymous.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Leach. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jim Leach. I live on Plymouth River. Unfortunately, I've had a lot of experience with the people on Taco Lake and on the river. What I see is I see a lot of PTSD symptoms coming out. What I'm wondering, the county could reach out to the people with some mental health services, probably some group therapies, you know, made a few new friends. I've been through the PTSD cycle, and I see a lot of red flags. I don't know if anybody's ever considered that. I know the KRRC doesn't care about the humans, so it's up to the county. Maybe we can help take care of some of these people. I really appreciate it. On a second note, I would also like to see something that says it's okay to water your lawn on the river water. Can you irrigate our fields for our cows? And I've never seen a direct statement from anybody other than water quality says, oh, everything's fine. So if the county could issue a statement that the public could see stating that it's okay to use that water for agriculture or water, I know we're not going to drink it, that's for sure. But, you know, it's just not knowing that really it doesn't help people at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Just so everybody knows, there is something in process on the livestock piece. I reached out through the UC Extension regarding livestock use of irrigation water in irrigated pasture. They are in touch with a animal toxicologist at UC Davis. The initial response was not that detailed, but I'm expecting more to come from them.
Okay. Any other public comment in house? Anyone online?
Sure, not online.
Okay, I don't see anything, right? All right, we'll move on to the consent agenda.
I apologize, there is one of them.
Okay.
Battery 100 for today. Chrissy, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning, Chrissy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Chrissy Reynolds, Copco Lake.
Chrissy, it's your turn to speak.
Good morning, Chrissy.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Chrissy Reynolds, Copco Lake.
Hold on.
Thank you, board, for once again. Okay, Chrissy Reynolds, Copco Lake. Thank you, board, for once again coming to the aid and health and welfare of the people and the wildlife of Siskiyou County. I want to commend the board on being proactive and reaching out to FERC and bringing these important issues to the forefront of what has been an operation of obfuscation and has created mistrust and enmity as we continue through this process. I know I was shocked to learn of the permanent fencing mentioned in the letter that has been drafted to FERC. It once again angers me that, one, they could have provided fencing to prevent wildlife losses before those deer, elk, and countless other terrestrial lives were lost. It wouldn't have prevented all the aquatic losses, but still, the gunshots and screams of the deer are forever etched in my body, and the PTSD that is something that I will continue to deal with. And two, the fact that disclosure of the 50-mile permanent fencing is just now coming to light. It's outrageous, and once again, our good neighbor said nothing. Thank you, Board, for listening to Siskiyou County, for letting Siskiyou County know what our good neighbors have planned for us. Wow. I want to say that there is a typo on page 3 of the draft in the spelling of the word license in the third paragraph, a correction on page 5 of the draft letter under communication and public engagement is that the letters were sent to some residents and did not arrive until a week after blasting began. Letters dated the 6th, blasting began on the 8th, and we didn't receive letters until the following week. And lastly, I feel that the board needs to address the real fears and worries of the people here regarding the fire management plan and the lack of deep water pools to dip from and the upcoming fire seasons to residents. Now we have the added worry of the planting near what was once water with zero chance of catching on fire to an increased surface area of fire danger and no way to dip water to protect our homes. Our meager hydrant system is fragile at best, and our volunteer fire department cannot carry the weight of increased responsibility. All of the county now is at greater risk with less water, and it is not even mentioned in this letter to FERC. I imagine that the county is working behind the scenes on this issue, but this is a critical issue that needs to be addressed to FERC. Obviously, as part of the unintended consequences of dam removal has been the sediment, we need to know what is being done to prevent a catastrophic failure in fire mitigation. Due to high sediment loads, equipment cannot safely pump water from the river. What is the plan here? Again, I thank the board for being the communication arm for this immense project with a seemingly endless stream of money for those creating the dangers, hazards, and wildlife mortality, while the people with the least continue to bring light to the dark side of this renewal project. Even now, 500,000 more fish will be experimented upon, and we will just have to watch and wait.
Time.
Thank you. Anyone else online?
Showing no others online.
Giving it a minute in case they're pushing buttons to get there. All right, we'll move on to item 5, the consent agenda.
I'd like to pull item F.
F is in Frank.
Frank, thank you.
Anyone else? I'd like to pull H. If there's nothing else, to
move to approve the rest.
Thank you.
Second.
All right, Supervisor Hall.
All right.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Cobson.
Aye. Item 5F.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Sarah Clark, Health and Human Services, and with me is Jess Stilling. She is the lead on this project.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Supervisor Hogan.
Can you please talk to us a little bit about this program and how the funding is allocated? Seems like there's an awful lot being funded for administrative costs, not so much for the program itself. And it seems that there is some concern about needles, and not so much about other products, other parts of the program, and it seems to me that there's just a huge amount going to administrative costs. And that's my biggest concern. So can you explain the program a little bit and how the money is allocated and how much we might get? Do you have any idea?
Yes, it's $630,000 until June of 2027.
If you could state your name for the record.
I'm sorry, my name is Jessica Skillen. I'm a project coordinator at Siskiyou County Public Health. So currently, our Healthy Siskiyou mobile unit lost funding through another harm reduction program, and this will backfill that. So our Healthy Siskiyou mobile unit goes throughout the whole county, Tule Lake, Happy Camp, McLeod area, Doris, and we provide general health outreach. We provide rapid HIV hepatitis C testing. We now started a STD testing program, suicide prevention, giving out lock boxes for firearm safety. We do basically all health harm reduction outreach also. So we also can sign people up for like women Medi-Cal services if they need like any kind of SUD services and they just don't have a means to pay for it. We can walk them through the whole process, do all the referrals. The syringe exchange program is funded under this, but it's like a 10% of what it is. So if we go out throughout the whole county and provide all these health services, and that's what this is going to fund. We have been approached by many schools, by many other organizations to come and do Narcan training to talk about the fentanyl crisis. We just never had that program before, and that's what we're going to use here. We actually, a few months ago, went to COS, to their housing program, and talked about, you know, partying and students and what fentanyl overdose looks like. We provided Narcan to all of their staff. It's just a lot more of that kind of overdose education. We provide Narcan to all of the law enforcement, to first responders. That admin is to keep that going. And for the mileage for our van to keep going, this was to backfill what we lost in funding.
So along with this program, we also have the crisis van, but that's not funded through this. That's other funding. Okay. And then is there one other outreach vehicle that we have as well?
There's a community health, like chronic disease outreach van that has just started in public health.
Yeah, so Healthy Siskiyou started back in 2018, and so we've been running that. That's been a success. We go out almost every day of the week, and the Wellness on Wheels is now like a preventative care. They do blood pressure checks, blood sugar checks, so that is just getting kind of going. We like to show up to different events with both of them. We had a Tule Lake event recently that we both showed up. We have translators on board. We can do all kinds of preventative care on there, and hopefully more one day. We're kind of talking about different things, but it's to reintroduce people into the health system that hopefully we can go to Forks of Salmon or something, and you know, for somebody that hasn't seen a doctor, how can we talk them through what they can even ask their doctor when they do see them? So that part of that health outreach is different from Healthy Siskiyou, but we're working together. We're working together and trying to make the brand of public health to be trustworthy, and that we do go out boots on the ground trying to meet people where they are.
And so all three of these vehicles are countywide, they're not just in Wairika.
Correct.
So that funding is for the whole entire county.
Follow-up question for Chair. So I believe Ms. Skillen and I, we met way back when the first van, and I remember you being, I've seen him in Fort Jones, I've seen him everywhere. Is the schedule still the same? Because I think I have a...
It's still the same.
So because I know that I look, when it's convenient, I'll go down to Dunsbury and see where they park, that kind of thing. I do like the idea of maybe going to the schools with that, because a lot of parents, a lot of people, I think that could be advantageous. So just
At the schools, we get asked, you know, we do have Narcan with our first aid kits, but our staff is nervous about using it. What's the difference between a seizure and an overdose? We just never had a program to put that, so that will fund our people to be able to go in there.
So I think the word was that we have three different vehicles, but they're all separate into separate funding. They don't cross over per se.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Howe. It's just, it causes me a lot of angst as I'm forced to swallow a poison pill with the needle exchange, which I don't. So support. But the greater bill here is everything I do want to support. So I hear all the time the needle exchange piece is good for public health. I'd like to see the stats on that. You know, prove it to me. Because I largely see it as an enabling mechanism. And maybe even a bridge to those who may or may not try something for the first time if the access were not there. So I'd like to know a little more about that. I'd also like to know about the administration of that part of the program as far as the custody of the needles. Is it passed out? Are they, you know, how does that work? And what prevents it from getting in the hands of people who should not have it?
That's kind of a longer presentation. Yeah. We are very meticulous about our numbers. We count everything that comes in. We count everything that goes out. Our kiosks that we just put in a third one, is actually really working. We put one in Dunsmuir. They had a problem with syringe litter there, and we worked with their city council 2 years ago, and every time we go over there with our van, we empty it out. There's also lancets in there. There's for people that are on diabetic medication, they have a new place to throw away their syringes, so we take those in too. So it's not just people that are using drugs. We also take in whatever. You say we're in McLeod, there's a gentleman that brings me gallons and gallons of lancets. So instead of at the landfill, it comes to us to be incinerated. So we have, very transparently, we have seen a huge decline in people that are coming to the exchange. So with the fentanyl now hitting our scene about last year, about July time, people are no longer injecting, they are smoking it. Now, how can we save those lives? Is by giving out the Narcan, by being there, being a friendly face, saying, hey, you went from injecting to smoking, that's a reduction. Now how can we get you all the way there? What support do you need? Is there a doctor that we can hook you up with? Is there? So that is why we still go out there, is for that glimmer of hope of them reducing even down to zero.
But, you know, what really helped me is that I get an inordinate amount of phone calls and pressure about that part of the program. But the way you explained it, the general public doesn't know. It would be very nice to know the actual percentage of users versus the other part of the program that you just explained, and get that information out to the general public, because their perception is it's an entirely an enabling mechanism for drug users.
I think one of the things with public health, right, is they're grant-funded, so they are moving from grant to sustain programs, and it started as a needle exchange, but as Jess has been describing, it's just built into so much more, and, you know, in parallel with just a huge reduction in the number of people that are using IV, you know, drugs. And so we can definitely get those statistics
I would appreciate that. You just need to know it's a constant topic for my constituents.
Yeah. And it sounds like the other piece of what you're saying is that it would be helpful if we worked with the PIO in public health to get information out there about the van that was really focused on the broad program.
We would.
Okay, we can do that too. So we can talk to her too. Okay.
So I'm just going to read here from the resolution that you're proposing, that the award of up to $630,000 in funding two syringe service programs for the California Overdose Prevention and Harm Reduction Initiative to promote health and safety of people who use drugs by supporting a range of harm reduction services operated by the state and locally authorized SSPs. In Appendix A, it says that the following will not be funded, and Narcan is one of them, but yet you're saying that Narcan is one of the things that you're going to use. And I get why you would, but this one specifically says that Narcan cannot be funded through this.
We are not going to purchase the Narcan, but the training and the distribution of it is. We get it through the state. It's called a Narcan distribution program. You have to be an established program to be able to receive Narcan. So, for example, I helped the Karuk tribe get established because we were providing Narcan to them over and over again. You need a policy procedure. You need to prove that how you're going to distribute. I helped them through that process, and now they can get their own straight from the state. So, yes, we are not going to purchase any Narcan, but I order them 1,000 at a time. We set up the trainings. We set up the distributing. You know, we contact the sheriff's department. Hey, do you need more? Do you have any expired ones? All that is work that is going to be funded under this. We do not purchase the Narcan directly, no. But there is a process to get it.
So I get that you're backfilling, you know, funding that's going away, but I'm concerned about, and I'm not, this isn't that you don't know what you're doing. I understand how you're going to maneuver in that. I'm just concerned of the restrictions that are there. And what that could mean on an audit. That's where I'm a bit troubled. I also have trouble with the needle exchange program. I don't know how well it's working. I get reports that it's growing. So if we have a program out there, why is it growing? And why would we continue to fund it if it's just growing? I get that there's some good aspects within this that would provide great education, but I don't see the focus. It's more broad range. I don't know how we would, see the outcome of the proposal. How could we assess the outcome?
Some deliverables I can, the trainings, the people that we see, the demographics, how many, you know, school districts were provided Narcan. It's basically overdose prevention for everybody. I provided Narcan, for example, and connected with and was going to show up to a, I think it's Lyons. Oh my gosh, there's a gentleman that lost his son in Mount Shasta, and he contacted us and wanted us to participate in their run, and We just didn't have the funding or anything to participate in something like that, but now we could. We can be creative with doing something different. Maybe you're feeling like our syringe exchange is growing. The syringe themselves is not, but the trust is. I would say we get a lot more people just coming up and just saying, hey, your van's in Mairica. We had a gentleman that had a suicidal neighbor, and he came up to our van and said, hey, do you have any resources? So it's more recognized as that, but we're getting a lot more traffic through, but less syringes are being exchanged. We actually are, every year we've had an uptick of how many we've gotten back. So meaning that we get back more than we give, but our numbers of active people that are injecting are down.
And public health keeps very clean data on this, which we're happy to share. I think one of the challenges with syringe exchange, right, is they're trying to, with syringe exchange, I mean, there's lots of pieces to it, trying to get people into treatment, for instance, but one of the sort of major focuses is trying to stop the spread of communicable diseases, right? So that's not a very direct threat, right? So you have people using clean needles as opposed to sharing needles, and they're not transmitting syphilis, which is on the uptick, right? So it's, all of that data exists, but it's not immediately clear. So, but we're happy to provide data on the number of syringes and, you know, all of that, because Jess keeps doing.
So are we serving Siskiyou County clients, or are we providing services that people outside of Siskiyou County are coming here strictly for the services?
No, it's all Siskiyou County residents. We do ask them what zip code they primarily live in. For the 3 hours a week that we do the AI exchange, we do an intake process. We do ask them if they've ever injected before. If they say no, then we say, I'm sorry, we cannot offer you this service, but we can help you with other things. But it, so there's a criteria that they have to meet. But they do give, if they do not give a Siskiyou County address, then we try to help them a service outside of the county, which is very rare. So we had a person passing through from Shasta, and we just couldn't help them because they didn't live here.
So when you say you're accessing schools, are you saying there are drugs in our schools?
The schools are requesting Narcan trainings. So they obviously feel there could be a threat there.
And does the training go to the students as well?
We haven't spoken to the school. So they have their own policies and procedures. I would think that we could do like an after school, maybe a parent trainings if they feel comfortable for their students to have that training. It hasn't even been.
Wouldn't you have both? Wouldn't you have, if the staff wants training for Narcan, wouldn't you also have some type of training for kids for prevention? Since this, I guess, would go towards that.
It would probably be after hours off of school grounds. I haven't spoken to any of the school districts.
We haven't had any requests for that type of training.
I would request it if this is going to be funded. I think that's only fair. If that's where it starts, it's kind of offensive, not to you, but that it would even be in schools, number one, but two, would be protected in some fashion that you could not, for instance, have your department get in to provide education to students. I will leave it at that.
So if I could just follow up, and I'll make the motion to accept. One of the things I'm glad to see that the needle exchange is working, because the last thing I want to do is see the needles in the parks and all the places that, you know, I think that's a benefit there. I do think moving forward, if you could just start with any of these programs, because you can see the dialogue, give us a baseline data, do a follow-up of where we're doing, you know, where we're making progress, that kind of thing. As far as the schools, my wife works at a school. Unless they request it, you can't tell them what to do. So reach out and say, hey, this is available. Make sure it's available to them. Well, I will look at it. And I've been recommended motion.
I'll second.
I'll just mention too, they have the mobile van that's funded by this has filled a gap in policing District 1. And, for example, Wheat Valley doesn't have an FRC right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this mobile van has really filled a gap in some areas that aren't able to have those.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
Okay. Supervisor Help.
Yes, today.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Absolutely.
Supervisor Chris.
I'll be yes.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Copsett.
I'll be an aye with the caveat that I hope each of you will reach out to each school and you will report back here to which schools won't accept it. Okay?
Thank you.
We'll
do that.
Item 5H. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Trish Barbieri, Division for Social Services with the Health and Human Services Agency. And I also have Corey Watson, who is Deputy Director for Social Services. She has been working very closely with Social Change on this project, the CalOR project, and she welcomes any questions today.
So my questions, go ahead, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board.
I noticed that in here there's programs for refugees. Can you explain that?
Yes, and actually,
I'm looking for it. It's on page 4 of 8 it starts, I think. It might be in 7, 8, right in there.
It's the original contract. So, Social Services, through the California Department of Social Services, administers a number of programs. Some of them are geared towards refugees. It's not coming to me at this very moment. But there is one or two programs, I believe, that we currently administer. We don't have any clients enrolled in those programs at this time. The regulations are established by the Department of Social Services. Should we have refugees apply for those programs, we would evaluate their eligibility and provide the support and services and compliance with the program as written by the California Department of Social Services. But we do operate a couple of refugee programs.
So there's 6 in here that it shows. And so you're saying none of them are currently active?
I don't have that full contract in front of me. I apologize.
You can come here and grab
thank
that.
Thank you. That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Oh, I see what you're looking at.
This is an exhibit, and what it is it actually includes the, they used to, their codes that the federal government provides to us based on the different programs that they administer. By law, we're required to attach this to our contract. It does not imply or mean that we administer each and every one of these programs. It's just a listing of codes that they provide to us where we have to inform all of our vendors. We have to inform them of the various codes, but these codes we definitely do not administer. I'm trying to remember the name of it. On page one, they just changed the name not that long ago. Universal, used to be called. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah,
it on
we're just
one
required.
Of Exhibit C? Is that what you're talking
right,
about?
Right, but at the top of Exhibit C, it references the title of codes, the title of those particular codes. Do you see that, Wendy? Or maybe
can
I can just look
question.
At your hand.
Sure. So, Ms. Barbieri, so,
yes.
Corey, so at least in my way, I view this as if there's criteria for a grant, and it's like you got to have it incorporated in the program, whether you use it or not.
Right. California has additional laws above and over what the county has in terms of notifying our vendors of different codes and funding, things of that sort. And we're just required by statute to include this
sure.
with all of our contracts. And it's the entire list, but we certainly don't utilize.
And what we're discussing, it wasn't the primary focus to get the grant to begin with.
No,
it was
not
something
at all. Not
more,
at all.
More generic in for Siskiyou County.
Right.
Okay.
They call them assistance listing numbers, and there are hundreds, and this is a code, federal codes, essentially. But we're just required to advise all of our vendors of these codes, 8 pages worth of them.
So I get all that. I understand what Supervisor Valenzuela is saying, but there's a point at which, you know, something creeps under the nose under the tent, and then your staff is, lo and behold, stuck with, oh, yeah, it's in the provision. And I guess that's what concerns me, especially with what we're seeing with free health care, free housing, free everything for illegal migrants that are coming into the state of California, even homes at interest-free. I don't want us to get stuck under that tent when we have residents that need to be served as well. So that's where I'm headed with that, so that you understand that. If you can assure me we're not going there, I'm good with it.
They're connected in terms of the only connection would be if we administered all these programs, and we do not. The state administers many of them. As a background, we did consult with County Council, and we have consulted with them for years. Anytime we receive an updated listing of assistance listing codes, and if the board would like, I can provide the most recent guidance that actually require that shows that county welfare departments are required to provide this information to the vendors.
I'm more concerned services should be coming to Siskiyou County residents. That's my emphasis.
Yes.
I'm not interested in bringing in people from the outside that we can't even serve our own people, and then we have yet another population to deal with. So that's my. That's where I'm headed with that. As
understood.
Long as you understand that, I'm okay.
Understood. And just to be clear, it's just a contractual obligation that county welfare departments have.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor.
One quick question regarding those.
Yes.
On Exhibit C, there's a federal award date and then a period of performance regarding each one of those codes. Some of them are 1 year. Some of them are 2 years. Does that carry over with each extension of the contract, or are those specifically do those cut off?
I think they're more tied to the oversight that the feds prescribe to the California agencies, and I'm not sure, but I can certainly take that question back. and provide you with an answer.
Because in that regard, then most of those don't exist anymore. They're still in the contract, but
definitely
a lot of them in 2020 or 21, 22, and they are expired.
Right, and I think the original contract came, when did we initially apply or submit our contract for social change? 2 years ago, the original?
It was, I think, in July 1st, or maybe June, of 23.
Okay.
Correct.
What I would like to do is go back and work with our contracts analyst to ensure that this is the most updated listing of codes, and if it is not, then certainly we'll come back with an updated listing of codes to ensure that we provide you the most accurate information.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. And I know the feds, like the state, are behind in a lot of their guidance, and hello, it's sometimes a challenge, but we'll definitely go back and check on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Indeed,
I
think this belongs to you.
I would move to approve.
That's,
yeah. Second.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Sorry, we had a motion, you said?
Yes.
You, Supervisor Cocktail?
Yep, and Supervisor Valenzuela.
Valenzuela for a second. Okay. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Cox?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Cocktail?
Aye. So we're 6A is going to be rescheduled.
So if we could officially continue that, and then we'll find out what date we want to bring that back.
Okay. Do you want to continue it? Or you
yes.
Just want to
continue is easier than me. I can just move it to a new agenda without having to go back through the process.
Right. Next is 7A, General Services Airport. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Mary Hall, Director of General Services. I'm here to bring before you the airport updates. Week construction has started. Yay. County staff is on site twice daily, and we have a consultant team there all day long. We've had some weather issues that we're working through. Those, we are having weekly construction meetings and receiving daily inspection reports there. Our consultants and our grant writers are finishing, put the final touches on our documents so that we can apply for the AWAS in May. The Siskiyou County Airport, both bathrooms will be refreshed, starting with the worst one this week. We're going to do some painting, new flooring, upgrade some lights, and install some new doors, and so, along with some other things.
Fixtures too, maybe?
Yes.
Thank
yeah,
you.
The lights. And
well,
the
fixtures, I mean like in toilets and
yes.
sink?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. And then as far as for Happy Camp, I was contacted by the U.S. Forest Service by email and phone call, and they are reaching out to their lands person, and I expect to hear back from them this week about the abandonment plan.
That's all I have for you today.
Any public comment? How is it? I know that we hit a few bumps in the road at Weed Airport, but I think we're smoothing out a bit. How about the pilots that are out there? Are we taking care of them as well as the
yes.
FBO?
Yeah, the pilots, all of them are, most of them went to Siskiyou or have taken their planes elsewhere, but they all have been notified.
And they've been notified of the timeline, at least the current one, and what's on the table, correct?
Correct. Well, we're going to receive a brand new one, hopefully by this afternoon.
Perfect. Thank you. Any questions from anyone? Okay,
thank you.
Item.
Is it, I'm thinking this one might be a little bit more discussion, the FERC letter.
I'm at the B, it's the yeah, FEMA one.
Yes. Oh, FEMA?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You want a break, Lenny? We'll
I was going to say take a break just for the audio, too, to make it a little bit
okay,
smaller.
That's fine.
But that'd be great.
Thank you.
Recessing.